If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Ryan Blosser is a farmer, educator, permaculture designer, writer, and mental health professional. He is co-founder of the Shenandoah Permaculture Institute and owner-operator of Dancing Star Farm. He earned an MA and an EDS in clinical mental health counseling from James Madison University. Ryan served as executive director of Project GROWS, G-R-O-W-S, an educational nonprofit farm dedicated to growing healthy communities. He also taught permacultural design and gardening in Staten Public Schools before accepting a position with Waynesboro School, where he runs the continued development of the Waynesboro Education Farm. The intersection of his twin passions for growing food and helping people fuels his unique perspective on building community health resilience through permacultural design. Ryan lives in Churchville, Virginia. Without further ado, Ryan Blosser. Hello, everybody. We have Ryan Blosser here. Hi, Ryan. How are you?
Hey, what's going on? Excited to be on.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us. And we're just going to dive right in and have you maybe tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and giving us a little peek about your kind of your journey before coming to the Waynesboro Educational Farm.
Great. I'll try to keep this brief. It's a little bit of a long story. I'm born and raised in Waynesboro, Virginia, a town I love very, very much. I know this is a lot. I focus on education now, but I was not a very good student growing up. I actually failed out of my public high school and got lucky that I was good at basketball. So I got to go to a private school for free and ended up getting a Division I college scholarship to play basketball. That's where I fell in love with school. And in the 90s, Division I athletes and being a student didn't go together very well. And I got burnt out on the culture of Division I athletics and kind of had a crisis and left all that behind, moved to Hawaii. And that's where I discovered permaculture and farming. And that was 25 years ago. And moved back here to where in the Shenandoah Valley and started farming, ran a few nonprofits, did some counseling work as a child and family therapist in the community. And eventually in a crisis moment where our market farm had a flood year, I needed to get a job and I found my way to education. That was about 7 years ago. And I feel lucky to, through my education process, through the public schools as a teacher, landed in the project I'm at now, which is Waynesboro Education Farm. I feel remarkably lucky. I hope that was not too brief, but also not too long.
It was very well said. Thank you so much. So you found permaculture, which is amazing, which we'll have you get into a little bit more. But just before we get into that, can you share sort of how teaching outdoors and teaching on a farm has changed your teaching practice and your work with children?
It's made it a lot more fun. I fell in love with teaching in the classroom anyway, because of how rewarding it was, how much I enjoyed, probably through my counseling background, the relationship aspect and building relationships with young people And that is, for me, my personal theory of change. I already enjoyed it. And there was a lot more barriers in the classroom. And I wasn't having as good a time. It was a long game in the classroom. It was all about that reward, not about the moment. And being outdoors and teaching outdoors helped me get that, both the rewarding aspect. In some sense, it was even stronger, in fact, because of we're seeing the results be better teaching outdoors, but also just much more pleasant, because that's what I want to do. I want to spend the rest of my life outside.
Yeah, that makes such a difference. And so beautiful when you share these twin passions of growing food and then also helping people. And I love that you have this guidance background and teaching background. So you've got all these recipes. Can you share how that, all of that sort of meshes with your work with permaculture, and maybe explain for those that are listening that might not know what permaculture is?
Sure. Permaculture, a real brief definition. There's a lot of different definitions for permaculture. Our brief definition, we use at Shenandoah Permaculture, which is a company that I own, is using nature as a model to design sustainable human habitats. The background that I have in community health and clinical mental health counseling has helped inform that a lot, because at Shenandoah Permaculture, we believe, in fact, we're very much driven by a quote from a designer named Dave Jackie, that 98% of the permaculture projects that fail due to poor design in the human sector. And of course, we know that in education as well. You can design the best lesson. It could be, everything can be perfect by the book, your lesson planning. And if you haven't spent time building the learning community and developing the relationship and designing how the humans interact in the physical space, that lesson is just not going to hit, not going to land. And the same thing happens with designing and building a farm. If you don't design it considering the human energies on that site, it's not going to last. It's not going to be sustainable. And so that's one answer to one way all those different interests and vocational backgrounds of mine have intersected. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. So can you, now we're going to shift a little bit into where you are at the Waynesboro Educational Farm. This farm is, what I understand, is right next to a school. So can you describe how your work there and how you're working with teachers and the wholeness of that, all the programming?
Absolutely. I get really excited about it. I feel like it's innovative. I think it is, but I don't know if it is. I haven't heard of other folks doing it. And so it feels very much like we're, what's that metaphor, building the plane while we're flying it?
Yeah.
And we are a small market garden style farm. Mixed vegetables adjacent on about an acre of land. We only have a third of tilled land, and we are adjacent to an elementary school in Waynesboro City Schools. We do not just serve Berkeley Glen. We serve the entire district of Waynesboro City, pre-K through 12.
Wow.
Teachers and students have lots of opportunities on the farm. I'll start with our farm's goals. Our farm's goals is not food access, and it's not nutrition education. A lot of projects like this, some nonprofits I previously worked for, that was the goal of the project. I find that hard to sustain in school systems because the business of schools is education. Mm-hmm. And so our way in is through student achievement. That's one goal, and employment pathways. So building 21st century skills for future workers. That's our second goal. It just so happens by going after those goals, we grow a ton of food. We teach a ton about nutrition. We feed a ton of people in our community as well. We do that through partnering with the teachers. So our teachers and students have a lot of buy-in in the district. And the teachers have options when they contact me. They could use the space and I'm just hanging out. We can co-plan and co-teach in the space, or they can just say, here you go, y'all, and I'll teach the lesson. When they reach out, my first question after deciding when they're going to come visit is to ask what standard if it's a core subject area. So what standard they want us to tackle, and we'll look up that standard and develop and design a lesson based on what's going on the farm together. Or if it's a CTE classroom, we have a lot of CTE classes that come out, I'll ask them the competency they want us to hit. And so we are very much standards and competency focused. We embed that into every lesson, just like we embed tasting a vegetable into every visit on the farm. And so this past year, we've had over 5,500 student visits onto the farm. And I'm really proud of this number. When we add up all the instructional time of those visits, we're over 9,000 hours, which is about where a standard classroom lands.
Wow, that's amazing. So I just for our listeners, I want you to know that this is an Outdoor Classrooms tour and talk, which means that Ryan has offered some incredible images and pictures of his farm and the program and everything that's happening there. So if you are a Circle member, you will have access to the visual and the tour and the talk, which is amazing. So I just want to let you all know that. So we're looking at some beautiful colored lettuce here on your farm as we speak. So just gorgeous. So in this image, you are here with a circle of children, and there's a big blue tarp and a bunch of mud, and everybody's barefoot. Can you explain a little bit about what's going on here?
Oh, I love that week. So we run when school's out. One of the ways we funded the project early on. So now my position is paid through local funds. So the school district has very much committed to this program. But early on, one of the ways to fund the infrastructure was through what's called ESY, Extended School Year Grant, through the Virginia Department of Education. And that ESY grant helped us have after-school programming and camps. And so we do three weeks of camps with elementary and middle school. Every summer, we're in the middle of it right now. And this picture is from one of our elementary school camps last year. And that first week, we all got together and we built a cob oven together. And that cob oven, we ended up baking pizzas and zucchini breads in. But for a week, if you can imagine 40 fourth graders stomping in mud, making little bricks out of the clay with straw and sand, and then building an oven together, was a really satisfying, muddy, lots of water in a hot week. It was such a fun project. So, yeah.
So they made the stove themselves?
Yes, absolutely.
That's incredible. Incredible. I mean, it's really out of the box learning and thinking, but the fact that you are connecting all of this with the standards and really giving teachers the option of if they want to do, I love that, just that piece of the relationship that you've been talking about and how important that relationship is. So it's brilliant.
And once you have elements like cob ovens or other elements on a farm, the yield, the educational yield connected to standards are almost unlimited by creativity. So we used the cob oven when we talked about Jamestown, which is part of our Virginia standards. We used it when we talked about ancient civilizations, which is, I think, a third grade standard here. So once you have these elements, you just have to start going into your pacing guides and pulling out connections to what's happening out on the farm in the flow of the school year. It's really a fun process.
Wow. I mean, and again, it's incredible. I mean, and to be guided by the standards. So it's sort of everybody's like, oh, the standards. But it seems like you've really taken the standards and used them to spearhead your program. And
yes. Yep. Absolutely. I mean, they are what they are. I'm not a fan of specifically of SOL testing. As I say that, I believe you could have great teaching and high test scores at the same time.
Yeah.
That they're not mutually exclusive.
Have you seen a difference in your students in terms of their success rate after coming to and spending time on the farm?
We're starting to be able to see that through our extended school year programs, of which the farm's part of it. And this year's project is to not only track instruction hours and standards on the farm, but then to also start to build out research to evaluate how much impact the farm itself is having. So my goal is to increase test scores in this district. And if this farm is not doing that, and not supporting teachers and students in their achievement in that way, then it's not accomplishing its goal.
Incredible. Can you describe what's going on in this picture? We have a bunch of children that are bending over and it looks like they're in this salad garden.
So that was great. What's fun is this is, we do different rotations on the farm. And so we'll have almost every visit, we'll have four stations on the farm. One station will hit the competency or the standard. Another station is a give back station where students are giving back to the farm in the form of service learning that then goes into the community. For example, 60% of our food feeds food insecure individuals in our community. We also have a food production or food prep station, and we'll often have a second standard station as well. On this visit, this was a shop class and a CTE class from middle school. And they came over, they designed and built a learning wall in our outdoor farm, which is a really fun thing to have. And a couple of the stations were them actually implementing and building their design. This was their food prep station, and they're picking collards right now, collard greens, that we then cooked up with sweet potato fries. And we had a nice big meal together, collard greens and sweet potato fries, after they installed the learning wall they built on the farm.
Incredible. Incredible. I mean, that's like every kid's dream in terms of learning and just hands-on. I'm a very hands-on learner. So just to be actually creating something with your hands and having it have some purpose.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking practical. There's so many aspects that creative teachers can just see. They can see it. It's all there. It does the work for us.
Yeah. And you can see your passion for it. But I love that you've sort of set these goals and finding incredibly creative ways to meet them. So this, I love, love, love these pictures. You just are in front of boatload of kids. It looks like you're walking into the farm from the school. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's just an example of what it looks like. We will circle up out on the basketball court. And I met my best friend on the basketball court in 1987, which I always tell everybody. That's one of the reasons why I love this place so much. But I greet students out on the court when they come visit. We circle up and we talk about the rules inside the fence. And then we go over what we're going to learn that day. So our learning targets and our success criteria. And then we do a quick tour. We take a walk and I always lead. So I'm like, I'm first and they follow behind. And so that's us. That's, I believe, a third grade from one of our schools entering into the farm with me that day.
I love your pink Crocs too.
Oh, yeah. Got to be farm appropriate. And, some days I dress like a teacher, but most days I dress like a farmer. Sometimes both.
Do you have any success stories? I mean, you've told so many stories so far, but any other success stories from students learning and the memorable experiences?
One of my favorite examples of a lesson that we provided on the farm, and it actually turned into a really fun thing, is I believe fifth grade. Fifth grade has a lesson on matter, a standard on matter. This was co-designed and co-planned by a gifted and talented coach here named Danny Lee. He's a brilliant teacher. And we were together, we were talking, how do we teach matter to 80 third graders on the farm? They're going to be here, you know, in a week. Let's figure this out quick. And Danny and I took a walk. And this was in the fall when we were teaching these lessons. The core of what we had to teach that day was making sure students understood the differences, compare and contrast. Oh, it's leaving me now.
You got it. Matter.
Oh, man, I can't believe I'm losing that out of my brain. It's been a long day at camp already. Compare and contrast a mixture and a, not a suspension, a solution. There we go. Okay. So we had to compare and contrast a mixture and solution. And we're taking a walk on the farm trying to figure out how we're going to do this and how we're going to operationalize those ideas for students. So we built core memories and they could remember it and understand it and interact with it. And we had onions and tomatoes and peppers and all kinds of things that were ripe on the farm. And the idea hit us, well, let's make a hot sauce as a solution. And then let's make a salsa or a pico de gallo as a mixture. as a way of teaching that. And so the students, they helped us harvest, and then we had them in stations, and we made a hot sauce, and we made a solution, and had so much fun tasting that. And from that, we were able to hit our curriculum points in a way that students, it drove home exactly what those were. Such a fun way to do that. Another idea we do in December, we have our Simple Machine Olympics, which is a third grade standard. And we'll talk about wheel and axle. I built some giant Archimedes screws, and we make a giant slingshot and smash pumpkins on the farm. And so we integrate this Olympics into the farm setting as a way of teaching simple machines. And students understand exactly why a wheel and axle is more powerful than carrying bags after running the wheelbarrows all day. Yeah, it's so some simple but creative ways to teach these lessons on the farm. I can go on and on. There's so many ways we've integrated the standards into the farm. It's just a matter of understanding what needs to get taught and then knowing what's happening in the flow of the seasons. And it's great.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. So with every outdoor classroom, every farm, we're teaching outdoors. How do you address potential challenges with the weather, with safety concerns, anything in your outdoor classroom and on the farm?
So we've got some policies that we've set in place. And beyond those policies, I let the teachers make the call. And our policy is if it's below freezing temps, no students. If there's ice on the farm, no students. If there's thunder, lightning, no students. And if it's if the temperature, and we run into this sometimes with our summer employment program and our camps, if the temperature is above, feels like 100, so if there's a heat advisory, no students. Mm-hmm. So those are our policies. If it's raining, students are welcome. If it's 36 degrees, students are welcome. We go anyway. If it's hot but not heat advisory, we have our lessons, and we just help prepare for the weather. But beyond that, those extremes around safety is when it's like, nope, today's a day to stay inside. Now, with safety in general, because we have an outdoor kitchen. You see a picture here for those that are able to see it. We've got a Blackstone. And we've got a Traeger. And so we've got lots of heat sources, lots of knives. Often I give students as young as fifth grade knives to chop up vegetables. If they're fifth grade or below, they'll get those safety knives. And we've also got lots of spaces to get hurt on the farm. So one of the rules, I only have three rules on the farm that they need to follow before they enter, is no horseplay. And I make sure to normalize horseplay. I tell them, this is my favorite thing to do is to run around and act wild with my friends. I do it all the time, but there are places it doesn't happen and it cannot happen on the farm. And so we set three simple rules and then we enforce those rules to make sure that those three simple rules are being followed because they're about community safety.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And you just are very clear. There's a very clear in everything and just meeting the standards and the creativity and it's a very clear experience. And that clarity, it really shines through. It's just exciting. So again, we're looking at some incredible pictures of kids chopping, and it looks like you have this huge harvest that food is going out. So can you share a little bit more about what's happening here? And maybe you've already shared a lot of typical days and whatnot, but I'd love to learn how this must be your food distribution.
So at one point, yes, we changed this. So at one point we had, as part of our entrepreneurship program, we had a short little 8-week farmer's market that we ran that students could help sell at. And as a model, it wasn't that robust of an experience for students or as a fundraising model either. And we've actually changed that and switched that now into making value-added products. So we make hot sauces, and we make sauces and pumpkin butter, all as entrepreneurship for entrepreneurship, part of our entrepreneurship program for our students. And so rather than distribute through a market style, which we felt like competed unfairly with for-profit farms, we do it through value-added products. And the students are able to go learn about that production, from growing it to making it to distributing it. It's a really great model. It took away time from having to set up. This is a beautiful setup, but now almost all of our food delivery goes to River City Bread Basket, which is a community food pantry here in Waynesboro that then gets distributed out to to food insecure citizens of our city.
Wow, you have figured out everything. To the detail is incredible. I mean, all the little nooks and crannies that you have to sort of think about along the way is incredible.
And we keep learning more. It is a lot.
So do you feel, I know we had this discussion earlier in terms of, you know, teachers that may not feel as comfortable on the farm and you offering, you know, options for them. Do you see teachers that are teaching in the classroom? Do you feel like that you're, I don't know if that's even the right word, but winning them over? Are they kind of changing their mindset around working on the farm with you? Or
yes, I feel like it definitely is. So the first year of the project, I wasn't on the project, so the numbers are hard to track. But the number that was that we found that documented student visits was 44 students. That was actually the first 2 years of the project. Our 2 years ago, we had 3,600 students. And then last year, we had 5,500 student visits. That's not including our summer. And so based on student visits, because students aren't going to come unless teachers buy in. So based on our student visits, we feel like teachers definitely are buying in. There's some of that is breaking down, that discomfort. And I still want more. I don't know what our capacity is or will be, but I see this becoming a normal part of an everyday classroom experience. And some of the teachers that embrace it, again, it brings more joy to their day. They're always like, I'd rather be out here. It's like, well, let's just keep figuring out ways to get you out here, because this is, you don't have to feel guilty. You are teaching when you're out here. This is not a field trip. This is a lesson. And we keep stressing that we're linking it to their pacing guide and standards. And I think that if we can start proving through next year's evaluation and studies that we're creating, if we can start proving that students' test scores are increasing in the specific standards that they're working on out here, then I think we'll have even more buy-in, because a lot of teachers are driven by the pacing guide. And we want to alleviate that anxiety by saying, we get it. We're with you. We're here to help.
Yeah. And I love that you said, in terms of teachers feeling guilty, that I get that when I'm working with I hear that there's this sort of this weird guilt that it's like, oh, if it's fun, then I'm experiencing joy, then it must be not connected in some fashion or form. And you have in so eloquently described your program and how you're doing it. And I hope everybody that's listening is hearing you, and just the simplicity of the creativity and so on and so forth is just to find different ways to make those connections. So it becomes the norm.
Yeah. And there's a leap of faith that comes with this, because there's always a touch of anxiety when you get that standard and you're like, how's this going to fit? Yeah. And it always does. I don't know how else to describe it, but the trust that it just fits. It always does. You just have to noodle on it. And the longer the runway you get, the easier it is to find that connection between the standard and the flow of the day on the farm.
Yeah. Oh, boy, they're lucky to have you. So does the community... You had mentioned all the different the food going to these food banks and food insecure. Are there other ways that the community plays a role in the farm and the school and the whole climate?
I mean, that's a great question. I have to say the obvious. This is very much supported by our superintendent, our central office, and our school board. And I say that because when I hear your question, the most obvious pressure I feel, and I think it's an appropriate pressure, is the community pays for this. Yeah. So that pressure means I need to be accountable to the community to provide really meaningful experiences. And I feel like we're doing that. So beyond that, we invite the community. So we have, I like to tell the students, this is their farm. We have a chant where I scream out, whose farm is this? And they yell, our farm. And the farm belongs to the students and their families of City of Waynesboro. It's stewarded by myself and our farm manager, Jason, and of course, school board and leadership of Waynesboro City Schools. On the first Wednesday of every month, we do invite the community out for a cookout. And at 5 o'clock, you're invited to come help. We call it volunteer night, where anyone who shows up, we hand them some garden tools and go to work. And whether you worked or not, at 6 o'clock, we have a cookout. I get some farmer friends to provide protein. The farm provides all the vegetables, and we partner with a professional chef, and he cooks for everybody. And we've got incredible meals on the farm together. Sometimes it's six people. Sometimes it's 50 or 60 that are sitting down eating together, enjoying the space. We also do plant sales. Yeah, there's lots of different ways. That's one of them. And we participate in some of the local, our neighbor school, Berkeley Glen. We participate in a lot of their community interaction nights. So like a fall fest, we always open the farm and say, come on out. I love showing families around the farm.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Beautiful. So you have co-authored a book. You're an author. It's called Mulberries in the Rain, Growing Permaculture Plants for Food and Friendship. Can you tell us just briefly a little bit about this book and how it came to be?
Absolutely. I'm a little bashful about it. I won't say working hard. I feel like I got two different lives, but they're both radically similar. So one is I'm an educator by day. And by evening and by weekend, I'm an adult educator through Shando Permaculture and an author. And I try very hard to make sure that my Shando Permaculture life does not benefit from my Waynesboro education farm life, that instead my Shando Permaculture life benefits my Waynesboro education farm life. Does that make sense? So it makes sense that it's here because they're so deeply intertwined, but they are separate projects. This book I'm very proud of. Trevor and I both co-own, along with Emily Torti, Shenandoah Permaculture Institute together, where we teach permaculture design courses through sometimes partnering with universities like University of Richmond or JMU this fall. And we teach adults primarily in those courses. And we wrote a book about developing relationships to plants and being part of having plants become part of characters in your own stories. And so, yeah, there's a lot of plant stories in that book. You should read it. Absolutely. I don't know how to market my own book. I'm sorry.
It's very cool. It's everything you are doing is so incredibly cool. What I would love for you just briefly is to you, when we were talking earlier, you had mentioned what you love about the program that you're creating at the Waynesboro Education Farm is that you feel that it is, you can replicate it. It's like something that you see that like other schools could do. And can you just briefly tell us like what that you see in terms of this being what other teachers can take or other farmers and could take away from what you're creating here? If that's even a chewable question.
The effort is in starting it, not keeping it going. Mm-hmm. So if you can get it started, it's a classroom.
Yeah.
It's a classroom with a lot of unique needs, and it's slightly more expensive in terms of operating costs in the classroom, although I would argue not much more. The capital cost is more. Mm-hmm. And so getting a group of passionate people and finding a way to fund the capital cost to start up, and then finding someone passionate enough who wants to run the program, once you get to that part, it's really quite easy to build from there. I say that it's hard to start, though the effort is in the startup. It's also worth it. The replicable piece is that all you need is an acre of land and $300,000 to $500,000 of capital funding, which sounds like an enormous amount of money. It's a lot to me. It's more than my house. Mm-hmm. When you talk about the budget of a school system and that capital cost, once it's embedded, does not have to get repeated, it's not that much.
Yeah.
And then from there, it costs, you know, what it would cost a teacher and a teacher's aide to run. And then you have a whole unique classroom that an entire district can access. And so in that scenario, it's replicable because I believe every school district has the resources to do this. If we can prove that it closes achievement gaps and improves student achievement and student employment pathways. And I believe that we're going to be able to do that.
I would love to invite you back to the podcast next year, this time, to learn what you're going to learn and all the research that you're going to be doing. I think that would be really interesting to have you back. Is there one seed of inspiration that you can leave our either educators or parents in all that you do? Is there one seed of inspiration we can leave them with?
You know, what's funny is I've landed in my career on this. It's because I'm passionate about food production and sustainability. The seed of inspiration that is really follows that pattern, but it's not specific to this. It's my theory of change we already talked about is about relationship. Yeah. That's how you get there. It's growth happens through relationship. Learning happens through relationship, period. And so as adults, as an educator, as a parent, find your passion and invite the students along and they're going to learn. Mm-hmm. And mine happens to be outdoor education, happens to be this farm.
Yeah. Boy, incredible. Incredible. So where can we find you? Thank you. Is there anything, first, before we do that, is there anything else you'd like to share before we sign off?
No, that was great. I hope that you and your listeners got some your needs met. And I'm available for questions if anyone wants to email me. This is always fun to talk. I love talking about this project.
Incredible, actually, what you're doing and what you've done and the amount of children that you're reaching and families. And I absolutely love the way you have your approach in terms of connecting people with people and making that your priority, but also really connecting those the standards and not necessarily, oh, we're making this to teach sort of nutrition. I mean, that's all going to come along the way. Mm-hmm. I love your style and the approach that you have chosen to take on this. And I truly hope that more schools and districts will be inspired by you and your model. And may we see more educators and teachers connected to farms and schools. So thank you for your work. And we'll have all your information and links in the show notes. And again, thank you, Ryan, so much for everything that you're doing to contribute to reconnecting children with nature and schools with nature and farms and whatnot.
Thank you.
As we close today's episode, I'm thrilled to introduce an incredible opportunity for educators, parents, and nature lovers. The Exploring Nature in Summer Masterclass. Dive into the vibrant world of summer with our comprehensive guide to the 4 types of teaching gardens. This masterclass is your gateway to creating dynamic outdoor classrooms that captivate and educate. Whether you're interested in the gardens that feed, the gardens that attract wildlife, the gardens for art and beauty, or the gardens as outdoor learning stations, we've got you covered. Each module is packed with practical steps, activities, and insights to transform your outdoor space into a thriving educational environment. Perfect for early childhood educators, parents, after-school providers, and homeschoolers, this course empowers you to inspire curiosity and foster a love for nature in children. Don't miss out. on this chance to enrich your summer with learning and exploration. Visit our website at www.outdoor-classrooms.com and enroll in the Exploring Nature in Summer Masterclass today. It opens up on July 7th, and it is a 4-week course, and it is included in our seasonal masterclass bundle. And if you are interested, it is also part of our Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. So learn all about it. And if you have any questions, I'd love to answer any questions within our one-on-one discovery calls. Talk to you soon.